Welcome to Woman and Comedy, the podcast, with your hosts Jasmine and
Tao.
Now today we're very, very lucky. Jackie Loeb is in town. She is a comedy legend. So welcome, Jackie.
Yeah, I love the word legend. That would suggest I would own something, but I don't. A $2,000 car in Los Angeles, but beyond that, I'm legendless.
Well, let's talk about LA. So you moved there a few years ago.
I did. I don't know why. People say, what do you do in LA? I cry and try not to self-harm. But no, I don't. That's not true. I moved there, it was December 2010, and honestly, someone said to me, oh, Jackie, why don't you, because I was bored, and someone said, why don't you go to LA? And they said that, like, why don't you just do something different, go for a holiday? I thought, I'm going to call an immigration lawyer when I get home and actually move there, having never been there before.
Okay.
And I waited around, I applied for my O-1 visa, and that was successful, and then after that was up, I was able to get a green card, and yeah, I've been living there almost, yeah, 4 years,
Oh, wow.
Yes.
How do you define the comedy scene then?
I don't. No, you know what? Like, I think the stand-up here is so good. It's so good, and like, I do as much stand-up as I can. I could probably do more, but I get a bit, you know what, I've been doing this for so long, like all my adult life, and I don't want to work for free. I don't want to audition to perform. I don't want to – I just, you know, like I'm, if I was 20 or 30 or even 40, I might. But, look, I do. I do go and do, like, you know, freebies all the time because, you know, you're going to keep that comedy muscle active and also to get seen and also just to get out of the house.
Yeah.
But it's like here it's so wonderful. Like even performing my last gig, you know, someone rushes up to you to make sure that all the sound stuff's working, all the equipment's working, and then someone will rush up to you and pay you. It just feels like so luxurious. I feel like such a diva. Where in LA, you know, I'm dragging my amp and I'm bringing all my own sound stuff, and, you know, you get 7 minutes to perform and you're on with usually 10 other comics. And you know, which is great. I never begrudge a gig, but it's just, it's really, I remember talking to a comic about 5 years ago, an American comic, and saying, you get more stage time in Australia. And I thought, how is that possible? But you do. Like going from what, performed what, 30, 40 minutes tonight as opposed to performing for 7 minutes. But it does, it's a real skill to try and condense 40 minutes into 7 minutes. It's hard, and I really admire comics. Comics are very brave over there. Like, they just relish the stage time. They don't begrudge working for free. They just relish it, and they do it with such enthusiasm. And, you know, people trying to just hone that joke, you know.
So you're not going out to any open mics?
I do. Well, they're not really open mics. They're more like, they call them workout rooms.
Yes.
Doing crunches. Workout rooms, or, you know, they're just little places like in, performed at a cafe. I've performed at, I'm trying to think of some alternative type of venues. Yeah, but the only disadvantage of that is when you're performing for lots of comics is it's hard to gauge, is this actually funny or is this kind of more in-jokey, something that, you know, all the comics laugh at. So that's hard. But doing, like, I've done paid gigs where it's general public and they're fabulous. It's really exciting, like performing. It's not really so much you're performing for a different culture. It's not like we're so different. But there is something really exciting, like the whole novelty of being there. I still pinch myself. I can't believe I'm there, supposedly living the dream dash nightmare. It's just such a weird place, like LA, like the whole economy is driven by the arts. You know, and I guess one thing I really noticed was, you know, conversation over here, over there, people talking about a screenplay they're working on. And like, and I remember coming back to Australia after about 10 months, and one of the first conversations I heard was someone talking about their shares, about mining shares plummeting. And I just thought, that's the difference between living in LA and living in Sydney. With LA, it's all about art and to some degree, you know, money as well, I guess. But here it's very money-centric, you know, and that being a comic here, it's still, thankfully, you know, a bit of a novelty, arouses some interest and curiosity, enough so to want to do a podcast.
What comedian doesn't have a podcast? Fellow comic Al DeBenny, you may have heard of him, he's American, he lives here. Hi, Al, if you're listening. He has a podcast too, but he said, oh, what, you're a comedian, you have a podcast? I'm like, yes. good one. But yeah, most comedians do have podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what I was asking about the technology. How do I upload it? I don't want to learn. I've learned enough. Yeah.
Yeah. We're recording on new equipment today our regular listeners. We normally have a very high quality Zoom, but Tao and I are not that rich. So thank you, Mark Williamson, if you're listening. He's a bit of a fan. He was loaning it to us. So now we're using a condenser mic
it's
in the
very
laptop.
Impressive condenser mic. I love the contrasting black and red.
Oh, it's very, very stylish.
It's very
slimming. And if there's any background noise, so there may or may not be after I've edited this, enjoy the music. We are recording at the Oatley Hotel, as Jackie is a very busy schedule. She's a very
not
busy
really,
lady.
They're just incredibly lazy and just wanted to go directly from the stage onto the closest seat. Just happened to be here.
Yeah, it's not Podcast Central, which is nearby. Undisclosed location. So, Jackie, how did you get into stand-up? Did you just fall into it?
Well, Tal, interesting enough, was talking about the PN, the University of Western Sydney. Mm-hmm. And so I was studying acting there, and I finished. I thought, what can I do? And I wanted to act, and I did a little bit of pantomime type kids shows. And then, I don't know, I found out about an open mic night at the Comedy Store, and I started doing that, did that every week, like the same jokes for 6 months, and then I got sick of it, people stopped laughing. So I thought, oh, I don't know if I really like this. I still don't know if I really like this. But anyway, so I took some time off to reassess it all, like to write one new joke, and then went back into it and kind of haven't really stopped. Yeah, so that's pretty much, I just wanted an outlet to perform. I never really understood what stand-up comedy was. Like, even when I started doing that, I didn't really have a strong idea, a sense of what that entailed. I just kind of got up there and did silly things, and then eventually... I still do silly things. I can't even
finish that
sentence. You have people telling you that you're funny. And
yeah, I think I've always been funny. Like, that's not necessarily saying I always thought I was a funny stand-up, because as a child, I didn't know it's that. I always, like, admired funny people. Like, I love Lisa Ball. I love Benny Hill. Like, I love laughing. I love comedy. And I knew I wanted to do something comedic, but I wasn't quite sure what. And I remember I did a show in high school, and one of the reviews was that I was about 15, that I was a hoot, meaning I was very funny. And I just thought, wow, that's incredible. And to be described, I would have preferred pretty, but hoot will do. And I just thought, okay, let's explore this. And yeah, it's just something, I guess humor is something that's always evolving, you know.
Yes.
And it's something that I feel like I haven't mastered, like, you know. You know, you have a great gig, great gig, great gig, and then you'll have a very humbling gig and think, oh, okay, maybe I'm not as good as this as I thought I was. And there's so many variables. There's so, like, people not relating to what you're talking about, or generally you can bluff your way. Like, if you had a crappy day, you get on stage and you have to have some iota of professionalism and kind of just as you do in any profession, and you just kind of soldier on and power on. But it's just, I don't know why anyone would choose to do this. It's the weirdest job. I can't believe I even do this. In fact, I hesitate. What do you do? I'm like a musician, but I don't know. That's great. Yeah. I'm like a musician, but I don't know. That's my job title. But, I don't know. I just kind of fell into it. And I love it. And I feel like I manipulate and use it, abuse it to do what I want to do, which is act and do music.
Yeah.
So I create characters on stage and I do as many songs, even if they're remotely funny, even if they're...
I love your songs.
Horrible songs, they're being included in the act. But I do love comedy, and I find it very... Hearing people laugh, making strangers laugh is very satisfying.
But acting's your first love?
Well, it's changing. I think as I've gotten older, I mean, comedy's hard work, and it's very... A lot of young people, like every time I come back from LA, there's like a new batch of comics. Like there's so many new ones. And just when I think I've kind of met all the new ones, there's another batch of new ones. Like just flown. No, they're not flown. So everyone's really different. I think, wow, they're amazing, some of them. The level of confidence too, and the inventiveness, it's great. Really good.
Yeah.
I don't like them.
No, there's some really, really good young comics out there.
It's
probably only early 20s, and some of the podcast listeners, comics and otherwise, may be familiar with Sam Campbell. He's a very funny guy. Yeah, check out his work, Jackie. I think you'd like.
I'll let him check out my work first. And once I think Sam has done that, I might look at his work.
I'm sure he's lovely. His soul's good.
I probably know him.
Who are some of your influences, either in comedy, music, anything?
I don't know. Is that terrible? I've got people that I really like. I love Lucille Ball, Jennifer Saunders. They generally tend to be women too. Benny Hill. I know Benny Hill's a terrible example. But he made me laugh. I know it's completely un-PC, but I was watching it, you know, the repeats on Foxtel. I mean, it's like 30, 40 years old now. Still makes me laugh. Maybe I'm laughing at the inappropriateness of it. I don't know, but I know it's so wrong.
That's a joke, isn't it?
Okay, he's not my – I wouldn't say he's someone that inspired me to do comedy, but certainly someone when I was young that I would laugh at or with. Who else? I love people like Magda Sabansky and Jane Turner and Gina Riley and all those girls – that have come through leaving out words, you know, fast forward, like people like Judith Lucy, Wendy Harmer, they're all wonderful, Jean Kitson, all of them, all of those women are fantastic, and the men too. Can't think of any offhand, but no, they're all great too. Like
Bill Anderson, maybe.
Well, Anderson's a great comic.
He lives in LA, doesn't he?
Yeah. I actually saw him perform in LA, and he was at a night with about five or six other comics, and he was so good. He headlined because he gets so much stage time. That's the thing. Like he's doing writing an hour of new material probably every year for his festivals, and he gets a lot of stage time. He's very slick. He's very clever. He's very nice too. He's a really, really nice guy. And watching him, not that the other comics weren't good, but watching him, he's really in a league of his own. He's so slick and so polished and so confident. Yeah, he's a great comic. Who else do I like? Eddie Izzard. I love Eddie Izzard. I think he's really funny. I met him, I was on my way to do the Edinburgh Festival in 2005. This is going to sound really wanky, but my agent said, do you want to come by New York and we'll do a bit of, try and get you some stage time. And then that happened, which was great. And he was on, actually, Will Anderson, and he was on that night. And so was Adam Hills and James Smith. We did this showcase. Nothing came of it, but I did the showcase. It goes on the resume. And that was 2005. And my agent got invited to an opening of The Aristocrats. Have you heard of The Aristocrats? It's a comedy, it's a film, it's like a documentary type film, and it's all featuring all comics, and they have to take this joke, it's a really, really rude joke, and they relay this joke, and it's about the aristocrats, something to do with the aristocrats, I can't even remember, but it was kind of groundbreaking kind of comedy film by, what's his name, you've probably heard of him, he created Setlist, Paul Provenza, I think Paul Provenza did it, anyway.
Okay.
So I went to the premiere of it at the what was it? It was in New York. I think it may have been a something comedy club store basement, whatever they're called. And I met Eddie Izzard. And I remember I'd just seen his show a year before. And it was amazing, amazing. And I interrupted him and I was pinching myself. And he pinched me. And I said, I wasn't that young. I was 33 and I'd been doing stand-up for 10 years or something. No, more than that, 13 years. But I was completely starstruck and I said to him, what advice would you give to someone like me in comedy? He said, don't do comedy clubs. Well, I have to do them. Yeah, so I thought that was really interesting advice. And I understand at the time I thought, well, I have to do comedy clubs because where else would you do comedy? And how are you going to hone your set and how are you going to earn an income? But I understand what he means. What I found, what I like about doing festival shows is if you set the tone of your show.
Okay.
Tonight was fantastic, but, it's a shift for the audience. When they've heard, say, material about one specific subject, someone else gets on, talks about something else, and then they've got to kind of adjust to my sense of humour that might be vastly different, material that might be vastly different to... say, that's not criticism of a 20-year-old boy, but if a 20-year-old boy's just been on stage talking about 20-year-old boy stuff and the 43-year-old woman comes on stage and talking about something that's other end of the spectrum, it's a shift and adjustment, and so you don't get to set the tone of the show. And I'm I think ultimately it would be great to have a really huge profile, or even a moderately huge profile. And, you know, where the audience comes specifically to see you when you're doing festival shows or theatre shows, and you can slowly phase out comedy clubs. But this comedy clubs are amazing, though. Yeah. People are so pumped and have a good time.
Yeah, comedy clubs and pubs.
There's an energy like playing at the Comedy Store in Sydney when it's packed. It's amazing. It's great.
It's a platform.
And then it's different to a theatre show, which maybe the audiences are more reserved and there's more of a subdued vibe, yeah. You know. Anyway, I'm performance four. I just go in there.
Now, at the time that this episode has been released, it's a few months later.
And I'm skinny. A few months has passed and Jackie's just been booked in a sitcom.
So slim. and you've just been here to do your comedy festival show with Gretel.
Yeah, did the comedy show. That was fun. I want to watch it. Oh, did you come and see?
Yeah.
What night did you come?
It was on Saturday. She was jet lagged.
I hope you didn't come on Thursday. No, it's so funny.
And then you
did
the Comedy Store the same night.
That's right. And then they did 60 and 60,
which Tao also did, and I was out back wrangling. Comics. So, for anyone who doesn't know what wrangling is, wrangling is organising heaps of comics, have X amount of people on either side of the stage so that we constantly have a flow of comics. Is you've got 60 people who get 1 minute each, and Chris Wainhouse gets 5 minutes.
That was very funny. Referred to everybody else as his support act, which
he's
I thought
great.
Was genius. Yeah, I like
Chris.
Funny guy.
He's lots of fun.
Yeah, so that's been good fun working with Gretel, and I think, you know, although we're sharing the bill, we have a similar sensitivity in terms of, I don't know, our delivery, and I mean, though our material is different, it's not like performing after 20-year-old boy. This is once again not a criticism of 20-year-old boys. I was once a 20-year-old boy, but you know, it's just a different vibe, you know.
Yeah.
The audience don't have to make that leap, you know.
Yeah, true.
But she's wonderful. And she's so funny. Not only is she so funny, she's the nicest person, just divine and incredibly supportive. And I find that with, you know, really successful people that I've worked with, they're generally the ones that aren't threatened. They're the ones that are really encouraging. Whereas I would be like, if someone's going to act for me, make sure they're really shit. I'd be like, no, she's brilliantly funny. She's just so clever and so brave, you know.
How did you meet Gretel? How did it start?
Through my manager. So, do you want to do a show with Gretel? I was like, yes, I'd love to. And then we actually met doing a radio interview in the lobby at 2GB.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, you've performed at a few different venues, right? I read somewhere you performed to the highly medicated and institutionalized.
Yeah, I remember I had a friend. I made a music video when I was about 23, a song called Limited Social Skills. I've got it somewhere. It's really frustrating. Old technology. I can't even really upload it. It's on a VHS tape.
Oh,
and I don't want to. I tried to put it onto a mini, it's an old technology again, mini DV tape, and then into the mini DV camera, and then upload it to my computer. I did it once.
You know, you can pay people to
yes,
do that.
Yes, that
stuff
involves money.
Oh, sorry, audience. I should mention that Jackie is part Jewish. Is that right?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think this interview.
No, that's okay. I'm allowed to. I've got Jewish blood in me.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm always like really careful with my money. Like, oh, do I really have to pay for?
Oh no, it's more like I want to be able to do it all myself. I think it comes to the territory of being a comic in that you're working in isolation. You're working on stage pretty much on your own, usually you're generating your own material. And just like this thing of being self-sufficient, I've got other skills like with recording. I do a lot of recording, and it's something that I know how to do. It's just finding, well, I've got time. I was going to say finding the time, but plenty of time. But I don't know, it's things are limited. I think it's more I can do it, but it's the limited patience.
Yeah.
You know, wiring up the cables to the back of the TV to put in, I don't even know if the VHS recorder still works, you know.
True.
Yeah, so anyway, how did I was at Long Bay Jail in the psych ward. A friend that directed the music video said, she's from New Zealand. She said, I'm playing a music video. We're making a music video to Jailbreak. they screened the video for Jailbreak. And then I came on and I did my performance. And I remember there were sandwiches and it was catered for. And it was the first time I couldn't eat because I was, I don't know, it's a sideboard,
yeah.
You know. And they're yeah. all heavily medicated, but it was like, oh, and it was, I can't remember, I was about 22 or 23. I can't remember if they laughed or not. I think they enjoyed it. I couldn't get out there fast enough. And I remember being at the front of the prison when I was going in. They said, oh, you, Jackie Love. Jackie, you probably don't know who Jackie Love is. She's very, very popular singer-dancer in the, kind of in the 80s, very kind of midday show. Very talented, really great performer. But yeah, the men probably, that's someone that they would fantasise about okay. and not me.
Interesting. Now, back in the day, you used to work on Good News Week, is that right?
I did it once. You know what? Yeah, I always get asked to do shows like a week before they get cancelled. It's true. Aww.
Shame.
Yeah, like, you know, I remember I got on this show on the ABC called The Side Show, which was like a musical comedy show. Like,
okay.
Couldn't be more up my alley. And I got asked to do it like a month before it got canned. And that was disappointing because that was something like a perfect show for me. And that was great fun. And then I did Good News Week, and that was great. It was surprising. See, I'm the kind of person, I like to be prepared. I like to know what I'm going to be asked. I like to be prepped. Everyone works differently. Like, I love Tommy Dean, and we did a radio program on Friday together called Thank God It's Friday. Richard Glover, who's excellent, amazing radio broadcaster on the ABC, he does a Friday afternoon wrap of current events.
Okay.
And, like, he'll email the questions usually the day before, and I will literally spend all day researching stuff. Like, I'm not kidding, all day. Tommy Dean will kind of get them while we're sitting there and he'll kind of make some notes and, you know, he's amazing. He's so clever. But that's not to say I'm not clever, I just work differently. So there was a sense of panic when I got confirmed for the show. My agent had been trying to get me on, and part of me was like, oh, I don't want me, it's just scary. But then it was fine. Everyone's capable, it's just so much cliche, it's such a confidence thing. It's also, you know, you watch people on television and they're very off the cuff and, you know, there's so much spontaneity. And I watch, think, how did I do that? And all this is practice, it's practice. And so the problem for me is getting asked to do these shows once a year is I don't have the practice. So it's very, there's a lot of pressure to be good when you haven't had the experience and that's hard. But sometimes you can wing it, you know, sometimes it's fine. Yeah.
Have you ever done much improv then?
I feel like I improvise in my set. And true. I improvise when I, like, if I was to record sketches and stuff, which I loved. Mm. I love doing sketch comedy. I love doing that. Mm. And I did a show in Vegas in 2011. It was called Aussie Improv Comedy Explosion, whatever. Anyway, the lovely girl, very talented, Lisa Ricketts. She's amazing. She's an improv player from Sydney. She found out I was in LA, and she said, we're doing this show in Vegas. Do you want to come and be a guest for a month? And I was like, wow, that sounds amazing. So I went and did these shows at this casino in Vegas, and it's very regimented. Like the structure of the games. Okay. It's not like that long-form improv where you can talk.
Yeah, it's like theatre sports games.
Yeah, it's like theatre sports games. A lot of, all driven by the audience. But within that, there's structure. And it was that was really hard because you've got to get the story from A to B with all the audience suggestions.
And what you mean. Yeah,
and that was really hard.
It's fun, but it's scary.
Yeah, the stuff I thought I'd be really good at, like making up a song on the spot, that was the most scary, daunting thing. That was really, really scary. I found it really hard. And yet this other stuff where I thought that I'd really struggle and I was actually okay at. So that's my experience with improv. And in LA, I did a term of UCB. Have you heard of UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade?
I have. Yes, it's something to do with Amy Poehler and
a lot of people have come through there. There's Groundlings and there's UCB. That's in their Second City. Yeah. But I would say Groundlings is more about character development, I think, and UCB is more about, I don't know, improv. Anyway, I did a term of that, and I'll probably go back and do another term. Like, you can just do these courses for you. You can spend so much money doing this stuff. So I'm probably going to be a bit selective, but I have to say I really enjoyed that. And I love it. Like, I'd love to do more of that.
Oh, yeah.
Scripted improv, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I like improv, but I also like doing scripted stuff. But I like to, I know when I do my drop-in classes, I do like one or two classes a week. I just kind of just go, screw it. And then the teacher would be like, who wants to have a go? Yeah, fine, I'll do it. I just don't hesitate, and then I just do it and see what happens.
Yeah.
And I used to always be someone who would plan and control everything.
And you
now
can't.
I don't.
And you work out,
it's
like...
good, though. It helps you in everyday life. You kind of roll with the punches more. You don't just go, that's not what I wanted to happen, and why is this not working out the way I planned?
Yeah, no, very
you just
much.
Go, whatever kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, and it's a skill to not block someone's suggestion. And it's more about, for me, listening and not preempting. Because when you're doing stand-up, you're kind of you're going through the motions, and you're kind of preempting how the audience are going to react, or you're anticipating what's coming next.
Exactly.
But with improv, it's just like...
it's learning to let go.
Learning to let go.
Yeah,
go
that's true.
I just want to repeat what you said, learning to let go.
She put it quite well. Tao's very
I
good
can't
at
improve upon that. Yeah.
Saying, it's summarizing things, and I'm like, and she's just like, takes one line and goes, well, actually, Jasmine, blah, 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 blah. She's very good at summarizing.
But also trusting that you have that ability to tap into whatever is required of you. That's another
that's
thing.
True.
Like, I'd surprise myself sometimes. Sometimes I'd horrify myself. I mean that quite literally, the crap that would come out of my mouth. But you do, it's just, you know, once again, confidence and just being able to tap into stuff and listening.
Yeah. You were in a full frontal, right?
Yeah, I did that. I was very young. I'd just come out of college, and I just did the performing arts course.
That would be so exciting.
And I've been doing stand-up about a year, and I remember the year. I don't know if it's the producer, executive producer came. I used to do this wonderful lady, Antonia. She's now a casting director. And she used to run this comedy night, women's comedy night, every week down at the Cat and Fiddle Hotel. It was like the early mid-90s. She used to book me every week, and I thank her because I got my stage time. And she invited them to come to see us. And I remember they picked Julia Morris, who I adore. Love her. And Kitty Flanagan, who I also think is amazing. And they next thing I know, I heard the two of them are on the show. And I was very happy for them and fucking mortified for me. And then about 18 months later, I get a call saying, we'd really like to meet with you and talk about you being on the show. I was like, what? Like, and I was about 23. And I auditioned for like a girls singing group, and I got a few little rejections. Like, it was just a crappy couple of months, and then that happened. I thought, oh my gosh! And it was like, I was still living at home, and I have amazing parents and family, but I was at the age where I really wanted to just move out. I didn't have any money. Like, I had nothing. Like, I pretty much went from Aus study to the dole. Like, as soon as I finished. And then I went off the dole, and I was doing like little part-time jobs. When I say part-time, I mean like 3 hours a week.
Wow.
I was earning like $45 a week, I thought. And it was just amazing to go from that, living in Sydney on like a very limited budget, and then earning like, I think I was getting like, I don't know, a decent amount of money. Spent it now, it was 20 years ago. And going off to live in Melbourne, and it was a very liberating time for me. But stupidly shy.
Yeah.
So I didn't collaborate with any of the writers. I'd sit at the computer. I'd try and work on stuff on my own.
Yeah.
Occasionally I worked with, I remember one day Kitty and I had a bit of a writing session. But, you know, I wasn't working with anyone, so I'd submit these scripts and I'd come back with a big cross on them. Because I'd just be sitting in my own head coming up with ideas that were probably very in-jokey to me.
Yeah.
Some stuff I thought was brilliant, but some of my stuff did get up, and that was always amazing.
Yeah.
It was an amazing feeling. I wish I could have that opportunity now. I'm so ready for something like that now. You know, I have the confidence. I have the life experience. My writing was so much better. Mm. And I love writing. I just love it. Yeah. So I wish an opportunity would present itself. It will. I don't know when.
So everyone who's listening out there.
Yeah. Oh, look, eventually, I think ultimately just to have my own show you know, like to create something that's a vehicle for me. I don't have to be the star of the show. That would be nice. But just, you know, like a...
The Jackie Loeb show. I can see it now. Mostly sketch and variety. I don't mind if I'm in a couple of sketches.
Yeah. That's right. You can write on it.
Yay. That would be fun.
You've done a lot of impersonations as well, right? And a lot of different characters.
They're more guesstimations. Like, they're not very accurate. If you would actually compare my impersonation of, say, Tracy Chapman. Nobody even knows who she is anymore. It's so funny.
I love Tracy Chapman
for 20 years. And I do it now, the kids, like the 20-year-old people in the audience, like, they laugh because it's a funny voice.
Yeah.
It's like I used to end the show with Shirley Bassey, and nobody...
They wouldn't know who Shirley Bassey is.
But they laugh because it's the way I present it. It's so silly, so ludicrous. Yeah.
So what advice, a completely different subject, do you have for women?
Oh, it's like, piss off.
Women in the entertainment business, any advice that you could give someone who's starting out?
Be bold and inventive, you know. Don't try and emulate someone else. I remember, you know, you'd see comics, and I don't know if I was guilty of this myself. They try and emulate whoever was flavour of it. Not even probably consciously.
Yeah.
They would just do it. It's like, you know, Dave Hughes.
Yeah.
Like, I see there's comics that sound like Dave Hughes. I don't know if that's just how they talk or that the pacing. Mm. You know, I think women do that. Not all of them, obviously not all women. But just try, and it's hard when you're 20 or however old you are. Or even when you're 30 and you've never done any form of public speaking or never performed before, to find your own voice and what's unique to you. I just find your own voice, whatever that means. Sounds so cliche, I don't even know what it means. But
be yourself.
Be yourself. Don't try and copy off other people.
It might take longer, but you can get there. Usually the most successful people I find...
Tell me, I'll make a note. What do I need to do?
Well, they're themselves. They're unique. They have something different about them. So
that's right.
They're not trying to impersonate someone.
They're
embracing their own story.
And be brave enough to tell your own story. You know, I never used to tell stories because my stuff's... I don't know. I've never had anything to talk about. I think that's what's been good about going to America is just subjecting myself to, even though sometimes it feels like adverse situations... And I could get braver and talk about other stuff, but I think, protect the innocent. But you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to, you know, I feel like I'm telling more stories now. I want it to be more anecdotal, not so disjointed. Because I think as I get older, I've lived more. I've got more to relay, more to e-bash people about. And sometimes, like, even tonight, I was watching and thinking, you know, about to tell my story about the... going for auditions, I think, okay, this is a 3-minute story. I have to really commit to this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I was getting paranoid, thinking, oh, they're going to switch off, they're going to be interested, and, you know, but they were good, they listened. I think audiences have evolved too. I think, you know, maybe they expect a little bit more from comics. They're more comedy savvy. I mean, you're competing with, as a live entertainer, competing with, there's so much to stay at home for, you know. Like,
that's a good point. Yeah, it's hard to get people to come out. I'm always happy when there's a decent crowd at stand-up comedy. Like, good on you guys for coming out.
Yeah, so you've kudos to them, you know.
Yeah, because they could easily stay at home and just Google all these different comics and illegally download heaps of stuff if they wanted it. There's lots of sitcoms, but at the same time, there's a lot of reality TV, and I think.
Mm.
To a point, people like it, but excuse me. I think people are a little bit over stand up. Not stand up. I meant to say, no, my bad. People are a little bit over reality TV.
Yeah.
No one seems to care. They just watch Game of Thrones, and that's pretty much it. I watch Game of Thrones, so that's okay. I think I've got an episode waiting for me at home that I legally downloaded on Netflix or is it HBO or however you get it. What else did I put here? Oh, yes, funny story about how you and I met.
I was at my favourite cafe, which is now defunct. It's now a Mexican restaurant.
Oh,
where
wow.
I live in Sydney, where I stay in Sydney, it's like... It's like a cafe. It's like a hybrid business of coffee lounge and Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it'll do well. But I was sitting there reading the Telegraph and
the Daily Telly, the
Herald's just not for me. There's no horoscopes. Although I've noticed Saturday's Herald has the horoscopes now. And I saw a story about you, a young comedian, and how you were having some health issues.
Yeah.
And I thought, she sounds like a great lady, because you were so overreading, thinking, fuck, she loves a comedy. She really wants to perform. And I thought, she seems like a really lovely girl. And I stalked you on Facebook.
Yeah.
And then we met up, we had coffee. Yeah, it was fun. She's a nice girl, that Jasmine. She's a funny girl, too.
And Jackie came to a couple of my appointments with me. I had some nasty side effects. Oh, we got mucked around by the hospital once. They're like, oh, no, this is not when the appointment's supposed to be. I'm like, but it was so nice to see you anyway.
Oh, I'm so glad we could have a catch-up.
Exactly.
I like to catch up with people at the hospital later.
Yeah. So that's how I normally meet most comedians. I'm like, wait, I know who that is. I know who Jackie
is. But don't you feel, I think there is a sense of, Although, as I said, there's a sense of community, yeah. Even though you kind of, it's all about, it can be very egocentric.
Oh, yeah.
There is, when someone's having a hard time, there is that camaraderie.
That's true.
What do they say, camaraderie?
Yeah, I think that's a good word.
So that's what I like about it. I've made some really nice friends who are doing stand-up too, you know.
It's nice. You got some questions here, Sarah?
Sure. Yeah, you were in Last Comic Standing.
Interesting story, Tal. Interesting story. I auditioned for it. They had a big cattle call down at the Comedy Store.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Formerly known as the Entertainment Quarter. And that was like years and years ago. I didn't get anywhere with that. That was a bit dumb. I don't know how else to describe it. It was just a bit dumb. Then the following year, they decided they wanted to do an international episode where they have comics from all over the world, fly them to Miami Improv and have the auditions there. And I was asked if I would like to do that. And I was like, yes, that sounds good. So I went to Miami with about 13 Australian comics or about 20 comics from the UK. There was Israeli guy who was very, very funny. There was, a French guy. So from all over the place. So there's probably about 50 of us all up. And so they had the heats. And then they had, I don't know, I got through the first heat. And then they weren't sure. And they said, okay, we want you to come back. We're not sure if we... And then they invited me to come and perform at the showcase.
Yeah.
So they were like, I think about 30 of us at the showcase.
Oh, wow.
But only 7 people got through. But if you got through, you went straight to the semi-finals. So if you got through, you made it to the top, I don't know, 20 or something, and you got the good thing about it, you got a visa for a year, work visa.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted it, because I was thinking, I really back then had this thing about America lingering in the back of my head. Mm. This was like 2008 or 7 or something, I don't know, maybe 2007 or 6, can't remember. So nothing really happened with that either. It was kind of disappointing. I had a good gig. I remember having a very good gig, but then so did everyone, because everyone was really good.
It was very competitive.
Yeah, it was very competitive, and I just thought, you know what, this is not for me. I don't shine in this kind of the pressure. No more reality shows ever again. Yeah. But that was not the case. I did... Actually, haven't told anyone. The audition went like a January audition for The Voice in America.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I auditioned for The Voice. And I'm here in Sydney. I did not get on The Voice.
No.
So what happened was it was at the Downtown Convention Centre, and there were literally thousands and thousands of people. It was just – anyway, I was – standing next to the nice guy who was an opera singer, and his friend was also a young opera singer. So we struck up this friendship. We were together for 5 hours in the queue, and then finally we're in a holding room. There's about 500 of us in this holding room, and we're sitting there for about 2 hours. And you know, form this lovely friendship. And then we get to the audition, and we're put in groups of 10, and I'm still with my buddies. And there's not really an opportunity to warm up your voice because you're waiting in line, but it's not really – I didn't feel comfortable doing a big vocal warm-up in front of everybody else.
Yeah, you could, but it depends.
In the holding room, people started breaking out into singing. That was really nice, and we'd all start singing along. That was kind of fun, but incredibly intimidating too because some of the voices were, like, phenomenal. And then I got to the audition and there was this guy – I mean, he must have given the same spiel, like – 1,000 times that day because there were literally thousands of us singing. Without you, we wouldn't have a show, and we're so grateful for you. And you got a dream, you lived that dream.
Oh, Americans are good at sales.
It was actually Southern. It was a Southern act. Anyway, it felt kind of sincere in a kind of rehearsed,
non-sincere
way. Yeah. Anyway, I went to sing, and I was singing a Sam Cooke song. Darling, you sent me. Anyway, should have sung it like that, but I didn't. I decided to sing it out of tune. And I didn't sing it out of tune, but I oversung it. Like, I was trying to do all the vocal gymnastics and all that. And I oversung it. And, like, they don't want me on the show. I mean, I'm not. I am beautiful and I am young. But I don't know if I'm NBC young and beautiful, whatever network it's on. You know, so I don't think it really mattered how I would have sung on the day. I remember I did sing well. Then I thought, I'm going to be ambitious here and do a key change. And I couldn't land the note when I did the key change. I couldn't pitch it. I was really nervous. It's ridiculous. People say, do you still get nervous when you perform? Hell yeah. Yeah. Even tonight, it's, you know, somewhere I've been performing for 20 years, there's always an element of nerves. And my lovely friend, Mark Trevorrow, who is... Bob Down. He once said, it's because you care. Because you care. And I think I do care. I care about every gig. Some gigs also. Like, we did a big women's gala at the Enmore Theatre. I won't say the date because it happened whenever
apparently
this is.
Great. A few months ago, guys.
It happened 3 months in the future, and it was great. And it was amazing. It was so good. You do get nervous about things like that because there's like 1,500 people in the audience, and, you know. But I was nervous when we did the comedy festival, 60 Comics in 60 Minutes.
Yes,
I was looking back thinking, okay, I should really.
It was, pretty much sold out gig.
Yeah, really not do this. Let's not do this. And I kept changing the material. I got on stage. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. And, you know, like I teach comedy too sometimes. I do sessions by Skype or you do it privately. And then everything that I teach went out the window, like everything. Anyway, it was those gigs where get nervous when there's other comics in the room. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Not always, but, you know, you don't want them to see you not kill.
But, I noticed that the shorter the set, the scarier it is.
The harder it is.
Because it's like you're under pressure to make it laugh
really funny,
such a short period of time.
Well, you have to know. You can't redeem yourself. If you've done a joke that's 45 seconds and it dies in its ass, you've got 15 seconds to come and win them over.
Wow.
But anyway, you know what? I came off stage not remembering anyone else that had performed. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we're all so self-involved and, you know, nobody really cares. No one's going home thinking, oh, Jackie, she should have selected different material. They don't, because I couldn't remember anyone else that had performed. Yeah.
Cool. Just keeping an eye on the time. Well, not so much the time as the laptop battery power. Yes, we are very high-tech here. And apparently I only have 7 minutes left unless there's someone to plug in my laptop. So
I think I'm fading. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's really late. It's like 3 a.m. and they let us stay. I think we've been locked in the pub, guys. Oh, shit. No. Well, Nessie had a final question or anything, Tal? Or?
I don't have to see if I have a final answer. I don't know.
Oh, well, your battery is running low. You might want to plug. Ooh!
I mean, you've been to other countries as well, like stuff. South Africa and
that was
UK
great. I had an amazing time in the and we went to Cape Town and we did shows there. It was lekker. Lekker is, I think, African for delicious. It was amazing. That was fantastic. I performed in South Africa. I did a comedy festival there. And the comics, the local comics, oh my gosh, they were mind-blowing. They were so good.
Yeah.
And the audience, the love they have for their local comics, it's huge. It's lovely. They're very, like, revered. Yeah. The UK a little bit, like Edinburgh. I didn't love my time in Edinburgh. It's too hard. So grueling doing, you know, a month of shows, an hour show for a month. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I like it here. Yeah. Because I know here. I know the references. I know. I understand.
Easy to do jokes to the.
Yeah, like the stuff. Thing. Yeah. I like American. I mean, I love anyone that will come and devote their time to listen to me talk crap. Sometimes clever crap. Sometimes musical crap. Sometimes physical crap. I know.
And you've done a lot of festivals as well.
Yeah, I mean, Melbourne, I'm not really one of those comics that does a ton of festivals, but I've done a few. Like, I love doing the Sydney Comedy Festival because I don't end up bankrupt at the end of it because people come to shows. Like, Edinburgh, I could have bought a house for the amount of money I've lost doing it. And I thought, I'll never do this again. And then I went 2 years after and lost more money. Never mind. I'm an artist. We're meant to be poor. Never mind.
Well, you know, I think you can make money out of art, but it is harder to do.
Tell me
that. Yeah. Yay, I found a power source, so we're not going to suddenly be cut off. Yeah. So we could probably do a couple more minutes. If you had any more questions or is there anything else, anything you'd like to ask us, Jackie?
No.
Because we like to do that sometimes.
I don't care about other people. Just charge your topic and self-involved. I don't know what I want.
No, come on, mate. Don't worry about it, mate.
Don't give a stuff about other people.
Well, I'm just going to break into an accent. Jackie, it has been so great having you here. I know you're like really jet lagged, so.
18 years of jet lag.
Yeah, I can so tell. Okay, so that was Women in Comedy, the podcast.
Yay! That was fun. Thank you, lovely ladies. Lovely ladies.
We'll post some links so people can like your Facebook page and follow you on Twitter.
Oh,
and you can find Women in Comedy, the podcast, in iTunes.
Yes.
Please review and rate us.
No, don't rate me, though. If you write nasty comments, I don't
I didn't like this episode. It was the worst one ever. Well, that's not a reflection on us. And you can find us on Facebook.
Everyone's a critic. That's what I hate. Everyone. Everyone's so empowered. They can say, she's such, she's fat, she's ugly.
Yeah, yeah, people are tuning out.
Like
that. Well, I think it's about all from us.
Yay.
All right.
We were still good.
So good. Oh, my God.